Welcome back to Start, Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is here. We didn't have a Bears game this week,
so we're
just having fun.
Yeah, we were just chilling. I got to watch nothing better than a whole fucking Sunday of stress-free football, literally starting with the London game. You know, you get to wake up early, watch some Vikings, some Dylan Gabriel action, hot, sweaty Dylan Gabriel.
We almost, action. Kyle, almost saw Dylan Gabriel versus Max Brosmer in the second half. That would have maybe been the least remembered quarterback matchup in NFL history.
Would have been really interesting. Ooh, that's... Mm-hmm. All right, let's revisit that for an off-season topic.
Okay,
Impressive quarterback duel in NFL history. I gotta have to look that up.
That's a good point.
That would be interesting as a topic. But yeah, no, we're doing a bye week check-in. We're going to try not to talk about the Bears too much. If you guys want our thoughts ahead of the Commanders game, I'm just going to put it very succinctly. I think we can score on them.
Yeah.
But they going to score on us because our run defense bad. And they run ball very good. How will that all shake out? We see.
Hopefully 52-51. I'm sure that's scoregami.
Yeah, that's where I'm at on that game. So we'll see.
The Bears really downplaying that game. Me, I'm not downplaying it. I'm like, this is the most momentous game in Bears history.
I really want to see them win that game. I think we all do. Yeah. I wish I had any confidence in the run defense because I know everyone's going to want this to be Caleb versus Jaden. I get that. And I'm not so worried about Caleb's part of the equation, but I'm honestly not sure Jaden Daniels is going to have to do much if the Bears' run defense performs how I'm afraid it's going to against that Commanders' run game that's always very good, and that propped up Marcus Mariota just fine. So we'll see. But yeah, that's where I'm at on that game. That's it for the Bears for this episode. This is a bye week. We like our bye weeks around here. We like to take a look around the NFL. We like to broaden our horizons. Because genius like ours should not be limited by the constraints of time to just one franchise like it normally is. So
yeah,
we've got some topics we want to weigh in on. First and foremost, I have on the docket, Travis, we're over a quarter into the season.
Yeah.
And the Alex Smith event horizon has perhaps never looked more like an ironclad law of the universe than it does right now with Daniel Dimes. Like, do you want to talk about that?
We have to, right? We let it go, and I just kind of passingly mentioned it, maybe a sentence like, oh God, Daniel Jones, you know, but we talked about it pretty heavily before the season. Daniel Jones this year, he crossed the Alex Smith event horizon. That means, you know, this is year 7 for him. He has completed 6 NFL seasons. He has started more than 50 games, and he has never been good. Kyle, I know you define that. You like to do with.
I like it with Anya.
Average net yards per attempt.
Adjusted net yards.
Adjusted net yards per attempt. I think we've made the cutout at 105 plus.
Yeah. Adjusted net yards per attempt. That takes. I don't know if I've explained it on the podcast before, but I'll do it again. Fucking do it again. Adjusted net yards per attempt. That's where you take a quarterback's passing yardage, you subtract their sack yardage, and then you give them a bonus for touchdown. So I believe it's 20 times however many touchdown passes they've thrown. And then you subtract 45 times however many interceptions they've thrown. And then you divide that by the total number of dropbacks. So that really tells you over, I don't know, like a 30-year span, it's proven to be the stat that most correlates to like successful win, like winning in the NFL in terms of Anya. And I use Anya Plus because what that does is it takes whatever your adjusted net yards per attempt is for any given season. Like, for instance, right now, Daniel Jones's adjusted net yards per attempt right now is 8.35, which is fucking crazy.
Jesus Christ.
But what is that in context? What is that compared to the rest of the league? What is that compared to history? So Anya Plus, what that does is it compares your Anya to everybody's Anya in the league that year, and it assigns you a number with 100 being exactly league average. If you have an Anya of 100, you are an average quarterback that season. And an average quarterback in 1994 is not the same as an average quarterback in 2024. That's why I love Anya, because that way you can compare across eras. So in his career up until this point, before the Colts, the best Anya Plus that Daniel Jones had in any one season, the year that he made the playoffs that got him that contract, even that was not even an average passing season. It was a 98. He was 2% below league average as a passer. That was enough for the Giants to extend him. Right now, in Indianapolis, he's 126. That is that is Peyton Manning the year he threw 49 touchdowns. Fucking good. That's what Daniel Jones is doing. It's the most absurd thing I've ever seen. I'm very scared that there are no limits to this horror that Travis has discovered. I gotta ask
because he factors into this. Where's Sam Darnold's season right now at? Because for all the amazing ballsness that Daniel Jones is putting up, Darnold is also absolutely
did not think that Seattle had the situation. Travis, I'm getting a little feedback. Like I hear myself echoing.
No, let me turn my headphone down. Maybe you're hearing yourself through my headphones.
Yeah, I just don't, if that's what, if people can pick that up, I don't want it. Okay, I don't hear it anymore. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so Darnold last year had an Anya plus of 107, or of 114 with Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was an incredible achievement because his career high before that, although he did pretty well in that 1-6 game stretch with Carolina, but I don't think we counted that. But his previous high in at least somewhat of a full season was a 90 in his second year with the Jets. He had a 114 last year in Minnesota, but right now he has a 133 with the Seahawks, even more than Daniel Jones. So, and I really, and this is not to discredit either guy. I'm not saying it's a fluke, it's a gimmick or whatever, because a big part of the Alex Smith event horizon has always been they land with coaches who want them and have a plan for how to use them. Because Alex Smith himself was a guy who it didn't even really seem like from the time the 49ers drafted him, it didn't seem like they wanted him. They cycled through different head coaches. They cycled through different coordinators. No one seemed to really know what to do with him till he landed with Harbaugh. And Harbaugh was like, oh, yeah, I loved you in college. Why didn't you do this stuff that you used to do in college that you were really good at and like built? And so Darnold and Jones both, they've kind of landed in schemes where the coordinator, the coach is giving them a great job of, like, you're only reading half the field on this play. All you have to do is read a high low. Just read this one defender and then make a decision and make it quick. And that's a Darnold. And when you're ripping those throws downfield and when you have weapons like the Vikings had last year, like the Colts have this year, it's really good. And Daniel Jones, you know, I make it sound really easy. It's not as easy as it sounds because believe it or not, there are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL, like our boy Justin Fields, to whom it's literally just read this guy, and if it's open, throw it, is harder than it sounds because defenses make that harder than you think. But Jones is, he's just absolutely, like someone asked you earlier today, like, is this sustainable? And like, no, I don't think he's going to perform better than 2004 Peyton Manning over the rest of the schedule. The Colts' schedule, as far as opposing defenses, gets tougher down the stretch. But do I think he's going to turn completely back into a pumpkin? No, Darnold never did. I think he's just reached a system that works for him. A coach that had a plan for him is finely tuned to what he can do. And it's funny because I think it kind of reflects pretty, like we all thought that was what Brian Daboll was doing in New York once upon a time. But now that you look at Brian Daboll, and we'll talk about Brian Daboll some more in a little bit when I get to another topic. I really thought I sat here, folks, and you can go back and listen to our quarterback ranking episode. I said, like, this is the exception that proved that to bring out my Trek nerd here. This was my Jean-Luc Picard. I was like, the line must be drawn. Ha! Daniel Jones, no further. And there's no line, folks. Yeah. The Alex Smith event horizon it's physics at this point. You can't stop it.
This was such a huge year for the Alex Smith event horizon because I really thought there were two chances for like the whole theory to just kind of take on water, right? The first was I really didn't think Daniel Jones was going to work because our running theory for a long time had been take a guy with first round talent,
with freakish talent,
give him enough time and it's just going to work because you get used to the NFL. All that talent will bubble to the surface and you're going to get like 5 good years out of the guy, right? You know, and then whatever, you've got 12 years in the NFL and they fall off after that because they're getting older and that's okay. But we thought Daniel Jones, he's not your usual first rounder. You took him allegedly because he was NFL ready, quote unquote. Turned out he wasn't really NFL ready either. That was kind of a misnomer about Daniel Jones.
Right.
But we thought there really isn't any talent there.
Yeah, there's no room left to grow.
He's not going to get the same thing.
Yeah, there was, you know, like if a lot of these guys in the, like Sam Darnold is a guy that entered the NFL. Let's just say he entered with 100 potential. Like
yeah.
He just had, because he has a great arm. He's got great size. He's surprisingly mobile. Like he's a prototypical quarterback, and he just needed to raise the awareness slider. And it takes longer for some guys. That always made sense to me. That was the only reason this theory made sense to me. But here we are with Daniel Jones, whose potential was like 80 anyways.
Right.
And we were like, how is this? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just going to happen.
I called it in the offseason. I killed Anthony Richardson dead the second they signed Daniel Jones. I was like, well, not only is he crossing the Alex Smith event horizon, this is just the guy Shane Steichen would want to play. There's no competition here. He's going to look at Daniel Jones and be like, God damn it, I have to play this guy because he's accurate. Daniel Jones has always been a guy who can throw on the money. He's been a coward the first 6 years of his NFL career. I do wonder, and I mean, we don't have the time to do that in the bye week, but this offseason, I'm definitely going to look at this more closely, and I do wonder if getting rid of that cowardice and just having confidence as an NFL passer is just worth this much, because
I think we're
really
going to need to do...
It's just that Dimes is throwing with confidence now.
We're going to need to do like a four-part investigation into the, like, when did this start? Like, was it actually, like, the Alex Smith event horizon is when it became observable to us, but like, they're like Rich Gannon's a guy you brought up. Like, when did this start? What are the limits of this theory?
Rich is so interesting because I don't know if Rich Gannon was a first rounder, but it took Rich Gannon 12 seasons before he started.
The one guy I pointed out that I was like, if we go far enough back, the one guy that really disproves this, the only guy that stands out was Rick Meyer, who literally was drafted in 1993 and was still playing in 2004. And at no point in any of those seasons had anything resembling a good season, but maybe the 90s don't count, but like I don't know. I think we need to get like Pablo Torre in here. We need like a deep, and like, how far down does this conspiracy go? Like
we thought, or at the very least I thought that, this, we might never get to test this out because Alex Smith is one of the last to get the old style of first round contracts.
Right.
He got enough chances because the 49ers were like, we have to.
Yeah, if Alex Smith, here's the thing. If Alex Smith played in the rookie CBA era, he'd have been, you'd have never heard from him again. He was so bad for 3 years that like, he wouldn't have even gotten the, like he was like Zach Wilson bad, where he would, like, Zach Wilson, like, he's already flunking out in Miami. He's probably done after this year. No coach is going to be like, but like Sam Darnold always showed just enough that just enough coaches kept trying him out. And Daniel Jones, like, I thought, and I think if he hadn't done this in Indianapolis, Daniel Jones would have been the same thing. Like, he would have been terrible in New York, had one bad season as a backup somewhere, and then he'd have been done. But he's taking advantage of the opportunity, and now he'll just keep getting chances. We all know, because even if he has a great year this year and he does the Fitz magic trick, and after he gets paid again, he goes back to Earth, we know someone else will give him a chance, though, because this season's on tape, and the NFL will just keep trying those guys.
Yeah. Well, and this, it's the same thing with Darnold. The other side of this coin is I was kind of wary. I was like, okay, but he had Kevin O'Connell as a coach last year. Maybe if that guy's just a QB whisper, if Darnold falls back to earth, then I would say the Alex Smith event horizon didn't work on him. And then we're saying, okay, maybe this is just a weird thing that happened. Yeah. Clearly not. You know, he goes to a completely different system. You and I both said,
although to be fair, I don't think
this is going to be tough in Seattle.
I don't think it's,
and it's not been tough, Kyle.
I mean, Kubiak and O'Connell, very, very similar philosophically. I just thought my thing was more that I just didn't think the Seahawks had the literal talent around him, like that offensive line, the interior looked very bad last year. And, you know, I knew Jackson Smith and Jigba was good, but I didn't think they really had a lot of other, with DK gone, with Lockett gone. Like, I didn't think they had any, it doesn't matter. He just keeps doing it. And again, the Seahawks are, I mean, Clint Kubiak is his father. He's doing classic Kubiak Shanahan. Like, we're only going to throw it 20 times a game, but by God, 10 of those 20 are going to be fucking bombs, and it's working right now. And obviously, you know, eventually they might have to get Darnold. Although he just won a shootout with the Bucks, so who knows, man? There's no fucking limits to shit.
He didn't win the shootout, but well, Baker got the ball last.
He performed well in the shootout, yeah. Right. So it's I don't know, man. I'm scared. I'm very scared.
I mean, it clearly worked. Now, the thing is, the little preview, nobody's crossing the Alex Smith event horizon next year. But the year after, that's the Justin Fields draft.
Yeah, Justin, the question is if Justin manages to keep himself, get himself in that position to start again in a couple years.
Because Justin doesn't feel like the guy you keep as a backup, right? He doesn't seem like a backup quarterback.
Well, and that is the thing, and Justin is a specific archetype of quarterback that I do wonder if this won't work on. Because the thing about the Alex Smith horizon, with the candidates that we've seen, Alex Smith, Darnold, Daniel Jones, like it does take a guy who is absolutely willing to just trust, like, okay, coach says I throw it here, and just do that, and to play on time and do that. And Justin struggles with that so badly. So I do wonder, because, you know, a lot of this, the Alex Smith event horizon, we agree, it's scheme driven, it's coach driven. Yeah. And some guys, you know, that require, like Anthony Richardson is a guy who has that same coach and can't like be coached up because there's just a level of on time and on schedule he's not capable of. That a guy like Daniel Jones is. So
I don't want to say that about Anthony. I'm younger than most of the rookies in this class, Richardson. Right.
Well,
I'm not going to abandon anybody at that point. But yeah, I mean, the other guy I'm looking for is definitely Malik Willis, but he did not cross the starts threshold. So we've
got a long ways to go before he'd be a candidate. So anyways, yeah, that's where we're at on the Alex Smith event horizon. I did want to touch in, briefly on the second year quarterbacks. We'll do a little, I don't want to go in depth on these guys because obviously we're going in depth on Caleb Williams every week. But Drake May just had his coming out party on national television. He's been playing well before that. Honestly, playing a bit better than Caleb even this year, which is not a knock on Caleb. Talked about Anya. Caleb right now is 11th in Anya, despite really things going, I don't know that people really understand that. Like things have gone basically about as bad for the Bears offense as they could have around Caleb. The run game is literally 32nd in basically every metric. They are doing a terrible job in terms of penalties. They're in third and long all the time, and Caleb is still producing roughly as the 11th best quarterback in the NFL, despite that. So I'm not like upset to say Drake May who's been unquestionably a top 10 quarterback so far, has been playing really fucking well, had his national TV moment. It is kind of cathartic for us because we spent last draft season very baffled by how sometime between December 2023 and January 2024, Drake May went from being, maybe he's as good as Caleb Williams, maybe he's better, I don't know which one I'd pick number one if I had a choice to, I don't know if he's QB5 in this draft. Yeah. And it came, a lot of it came from some people with questionable history, but like, JT O'Sullivan, who we all love, like he had Herbert, or he had, I said Herbert, that was a Freudian slip because he also ranked Herbert really low in 2020. Mm-hmm. But he had May QB5 in last year's draft. It was truly bizarre. So yeah, it's been cool to see Drake May be like, because people are like, oh, he's 4 years away, he'll get you all fired. And I was like, nothing about that is real. Like people were talking about, especially because it was people that were hyping up JJ McCarthy. Like you want to talk about JJ McCarthy, who's basically a service academy quarterback. And tell me that Drake May needs time? Like, what?
Yeah.
So Drake May is playing really well. Jaden Daniels, you know, same concerns that I still have. Like, he's still, I know he came back. I know he played pretty well overall against the Chargers. Hit a couple deep balls late. But I still see, I mean, there was a graphic last night showing how often Drake May scrambles, how he was like he was top two in the NFL in scrambles since the start of last year with 60. Number one was Jaden Daniels with 85, like 25 more scrambles than the next guy.
Right.
He's injured his ribs once. He's missed two games with a knee injury this year. Like he's obviously like his style of football. Like I didn't think he could succeed as much as he has with it. And like the quick game accuracy, the occasional deep ball, the scrambles, all of that's electric. Still have the same concerns that I have about durability. Like, I know Commanders fans should rightfully be proud of their guy and all he's accomplished at this point. I will say also, like, this is something I pointed out to you. Over his last, like, 10, 11 starts now, I want to say Jaden Daniels has only actually averaged about 6.3, 6.4 yards per pass attempt. Like, after that first month of him and Kingsbury being truly explosive, they've been very efficient. Like, they convert. They have a high success rate, but it's very dink and dunk. It's not super explosive. So I do wonder, like, how long this keeps up. But, you know, well, he's keeping it up for now. But I wouldn't revisit, you know, in that draft I had him, Caleb, Drake. I'll own up to saying that I, you know, JJ McCarthy being QB3 for me was wrong. I'll give you that, Jaden. You got me there. I had him QB4 ahead behind JJ. But yeah, I mean, about those top two guys, I still feel like Caleb and Drake, when all said and done, when you talk about long-term potential, the way they're playing this year, those were the top two guys in the class for me, and I think they're starting to show it this year. Penix came off really hard a couple weeks ago because Falcons fans pissed me off.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he had that good game against the Commanders after that. But if you looked at the spray chart for that game, did you ever look at the spray chart for his game against the Commanders, Travis?
It's exactly what you thought you were going to get.
It's, there's nothing in the middle of the field. And so that's, I think Penix is a guy who's just always going to have he's kind of like Jalen Hurts, but if Jalen Hurts couldn't run, which is very concerning in some ways, like if Bijan Robinson forces you to play single high safety and he can take those deep shots down the sidelines, if Drake London's single covered, then Michael Penix has a chance to be pretty good that day, but he still doesn't like to throw middle of the field. He doesn't create on the move. He doesn't have a lot of, I still think that is a guy who is more fun than good. And then JJ kind of shadow benched, maybe already lost his job to Carson Wentz, doing some really funny historic stuff in terms of pressure to sack rate and QB responsible sacks, but in the brief time that we did see him, pretty funny stuff there. Any thoughts on the first four guys before we talk about Bo Nix a little bit, Travis?
Yeah, Bo Nix. So JJ McCarthy, I feel like, nothing about what he's done has changed my opinion of him out of college, which is that he's not an NFL quarterback. He doesn't have the arm strength for it. I didn't know he would saucy on the field, and that is even worse for him. You know, he's approaching Zach Wilson territory here.
And even if he has the potential to be an NFL quarterback, he's just nowhere near ready right now. No. And that's where I talked about that, and I was like, the eval is so hard because, like, he was bottom 10 among first-round picks in the spreadsheet in terms of career dropbacks in college. And, like, there were a couple guys in that list, depending on how you feel about Tua, there were a couple guys in that list that did have become good NFL players. You know, Josh Allen obviously became a good NFL player. However you feel about Tua, he's something. He's still here. He got a second contract. Kyler Murray, those are the kind of guys that did go on to become successes, but with the exception of Kyler, who became good his second year starting, Tua, Josh Allen, they didn't really break out till year three. And like JJ McCarthy does not look like a guy, the Vikings do not look like an organization that are really in place to give him 3 years to figure it out. So
The Vikings, just that decision to let Darnold go after you got, I mean, the way I think of it is Sam Darnold's a first round pick. And he's already been developed for you. Boom, you've got him. You can just pay him. You just keep him. Why not?
He's only 27. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
you could have gotten a first round pick for JJ McCarthy this year. And I agree it would have been a different trade, but you're the one who made that stupid pick in the first place. You could have had any other player. Just cut your losses. Keep Darnold. You already did the work. And instead, now we've got a head coach who clearly doesn't want this guy. I mean, I understand that we have to say wink, wink, nada. Oh, it's a conspiracy that he's been shadow benched. It's pretty clear that this dude is being kept off the damn field.
I will say it's very funny that the guy doing this, the guy with this quick of a hook, is Kevin O'Connell, because he had that big quote that's been quoted a million times last year where he was like, where he was talking about Anthony Richardson. He's like, organizations fail young players. Right. More than young quarterbacks fail organizations. And then now it's like, it's not so easy when it's you, is it, Kevin? Uh-huh. Like, when you're the one that's like, for fuck's sake, Jefferson was open.
It's so not funny, so easy
to be patient, is it? Like
JJ was kind of a mystery box almost, because Harbaugh just didn't want to use him at Michigan, which I said, that's a huge red flag, right? His head coach didn't want to use him.
And I said,
and they won a national title that way.
I said, I thought I agreed with you, but at the same time, when Jim Harbaugh had Andrew Luck, the guy that won the Heisman on that team was Toby Gerhart. So that's why I was like, hard to be fair. Harbaugh does that to everybody.
Little beast Gerhart. But however, I did not expect us to open the mystery box and see a little bit of Zach Wilson and a little bit of Johnny Manziel in there. I did not know that's what JJ McCarthy had hidden. And that is a complete disaster for Minnesota. Penix, like you said, I like him because he's fun. I like nine balls. I like throwing down the sidelines to Drake London and Kyle Pitts. Like, that's great. But he's not going to be like this world beater. It's, like we said, Drew Bledsoe in the modern
it's
era.
Hard, yeah, it's hard in the modern NFL to just see a guy who can't, has no creation ability of his own and won't work the middle of – because, like, I mean, you can serve – it. You see guys in the NFL right now, there are broadly two successful archetypes. There's Jared Goff. And then there's Jalen Hurts. Those are the two, like, because, like, Jalen Hurts is the prototype right now. There's a couple guys like him. Kyler's kind of like him. Russell Wilson arguably was the standard in this area for a while where it's like, I don't want to work middle of the field, but that's okay because I can get out on the edge and I can throw deep after your defense is broken down and I can do this and I can make my own run game and I can force you to keep playing single high safety. Like, you see those guys? And then you see Jared Goff's, which are like, I can't create once I'm moved off my spot, but motherfucker, I will hammer those inbreakers with anticipation before your pass rush can get to me. And then, you have, obviously, there's a handful of guys who can do both successfully, and those are the gods. That's Mahomes, that's Allen, Lamar, those kind of guys. But, like, broadly, you in that second tier, third tier, you have two kinds of guys who are successful right now, and it's the Hurts archetype and it's the Goff archetype. And Penix is this weird dude that kind of combines both, and I'm not sure how long that works long term, because it's like he's gonna move like Goff, but he doesn't like the middle of the field. It's scary, and he's gonna get rid of the ball before the rush gets there, but you know, he might just check it down. Like, there was a play against the Panthers when they were getting shut out where, you know, it was third down, and like he drops back and it's bop bop bop. Everybody's covered, and he immediately checks it down. But it's third down. It's third and four. He had plenty of time. The protection was not buckling at all, and there was no attempt to scramble, to move up in the pocket, to try to create a second window. Just immediately. And that's why, like, you know, people talk about his pressure to sack rate, his sack avoidance being good. But to me, sack avoidance is actually, like, avoiding a sack. It's not giving up before a sack can ever possibly even be a threat. Right. Andy Dalton had good sack avoidance from that perspective, where it's like, yeah, he was never going to get hit. You know, Derek Carr would have been an elite quarterback if he actually had elite sack avoidance. He didn't. He was a coward. Like, he would. I still think Derek Carr felt every sack that his older brother took, like, epigenetically, like epigenetic trauma, and was just determined not to take any sacks because of it. But, like, so that's my concern with Penix. And then you take off the P, and you're just left with the Knicks, Travis.
Yeah, you just Knicks. Get Bo fucking Knicks, don't you? We don't. I think winner. We're pretty.
By God, the fucking winner. He beat your Eagles. Boy Jalen Hurts, didn't he?
The better Jalen Hurts plays, the more likely it is the Eagles lose. And this is because their offense, for some reason, is based around not throwing the ball until they're close to fucked. And then they're like, oh, we're only going to throw the ball. Like, Saquon Barkley gets 6 carries against the Broncos, 38 passes for Jalen Hurts. And they were, the Eagles were up 2 scores. Why aren't you handing the ball off? It's a mystery. The Eagles are like the weirdest Super Bowl champion reigning, like clearly the best team in the NFL right now team that I can remember. It's just they don't seem to like each other. Everybody knows their head coach is bad.
And it's funny because it's like the second time that they've done that. So
yeah, they never stop. It's something about the water in Philadelphia. Everyone hates each other. I mean, please slander Bo Nix. You know, everybody here knows how much we hate.
Yeah,
Bo
I mean,
Nix.
It's like I said, it's funny because you watch the Broncos and like I really like that receiver group that they have. I love the run game. They have an incredible defense. Like this is a team and Sean Payton is a great coach and there's guys open, but like it is, I know Bo Nix completed the comeback yesterday. And again, if you can go back and you can look at that game and you can tell me like what throw Bo Nix made that looked like elite quarterbacking to you. Okay. But like, this is a guy, he's had the best pass protection of the NFL so far, has had a ridiculously high turnover worthy play rate, has missed so much open downfield. They lost the game to the Chargers solely because he just overthrew 4 guys that were wide open deep for what would have been the game sealing touchdown, any one of them. He runs himself into trouble all the time. Another guy that like he doesn't take a lot of sacks, and so people praise him for that. And it always keeps his EPA from being disastrous, but like it's because he gives up so quickly. He flees the pocket so quickly and is throwing to a guy in the flat all the time. He's extremely frustrating to watch. Like right now, you know, it. But I mean, you know, people say, hey, he's a winner. He just wins. So you got that. I think as Bears fans, we're very familiar with watching the kind of games that Bo Nix has won. It feels very reminiscent of Mitch Trubisky and just like that sinking feeling in your chest where it's like, we won, but like, yeah, with that guy, you know?
Yeah, we're not super happy about it, and there's ill portents for the future. Yeah. Like, what did we say about Jaden and Bo Nix this offseason? It was, these guys have developed as much as they can. That was the deal. That's
right.
We expected them to be as good as they're going to be in their first season. And so far, not only have they not been the same, each of them has regressed in every major statistical category.
Right. And Jaden, not quite as much, and he's still performing fairly acceptably overall. But like, it's one of those things where it's like, Caleb is obviously and clearly in every conceivable way, metric, basically better than he was this time last year. Yeah. Drake May, clearly better in every conceivable way than he was this time last year. Bo Nix looks arguably, at best, he looks the same as he did last September and October, which isn't a good thing because he was disastrous in the first half last year before they found a little rhythm late. But at worst, he looks worse. And like, you just, he's 26 and he's played more college ball than anybody. And just, you know, there's, what is the ceiling? It'll always be the question with Bo Nix. What is the damn ceiling? Now, one last second year quarterback I want to talk about, though, is Spencer Rattler.
Yeah,
bit of a rough rookie year last year, but I do think he's looking. I'm glad that New Orleans did not let the horribly stupid Tyler Shuck draft pick make them reward the wrong player, because I thought Nix clearly was the Rattler. Good Lord, Rattler was the better quarterback of the two in the preseason. They've started Rattler. They obviously don't have a ton of talent there, but he's played pretty well, and they played some tough opponents, but he's played pretty well. As a guy who was higher on Rattler by the end of the draft process than I expected to be, and I said that I thought Sean Payton should not have taken Bo Nix in the first round. I thought he should have just taken a different player, taken Rattler in the second or third round. I think he'd be cooking more if he had Rattler right now.
Numbers aren't super great with Spencer Rattler. Let's just say that. But I don't think he'd be any worse off if he just waited and took Spencer Rattler than he would if, you know, and using that higher pick on somebody else. That's for sure. I'm a noted Spencer Rattler hater. I don't know. I haven't heard anything out of the Saints org that makes me think that he's still the little shit heel he was when he was in college.
No, I definitely think he... I mean, Rattler... Let's see here. Rattler, the yards per attempt's not great. That's for sure not great. But the QBR is solid. The passer rating's solid. Success rate's not bad. He's... Only
we
got
love
the one
QBR
interception.
Here.
Although the one interception is a little misleading because he does have a lot more turnover-worthy plays than that PFF. But yeah, no, I thought Rattler, like I said, considering the circumstances, and again, I'm not saying I saw someone, Ben Solak of ESPN was like, Spencer Rattler's been quietly excellent this year. And I was like, hold on there, buddy. He's been
deep chill pill there.
He has looked like an NFL quarterback this year. That's as far as I'm willing to go. But that's more than most people were willing to grant him. So
yeah. One day he might be a backup quarterback somewhere, and that team might be confident in their backup quarterback situation. How about that?
It's just very funny that he also is still considerably younger than Tyler Shuck. That's what
that is very funny. Yeah. So. Just all these old ass rookie and second year quarterbacks of the NFL just making everybody like, what's going on? We talked about a Mecca Ibuka in the chat. Another guy who, not a quarterback, but a guy who hung around in college. And, you know, I kept saying, Emeka Ibuka, they keep giving him a second round grade, and I don't know why, but then he kept going back to Ohio State. Because of NIL money. He was making a lot of money.
Some guys are just easy projections, and especially a wide receiver, there really aren't many. But, like, Ibuka, it's just one of those things. Like, how is this guy not going to be good? Like,
fast, smooth, great hands, good route runner. Like, there was nothing wrong with Ibuka. And of course everybody just passed him up because everybody else is just, ooh, this guy might be a little more shiny. Ooh, this Shamar Stewart could be really neat. My favorite bit about Shamar Stewart before he got injured is he had a PFF grade of like 80 in week one, but he had zero counting stats. And if there is a better way to explain Shamar Stewart, just as a player, I don't know what it is people looking at him and saying, holy shit, that guy's cool. And then you look at the stat sheet and you're like, oh, he didn't do anything. Weird. Huh. All right. And now he's injured. So I can't laugh at Shamar too much anymore, which is unfortunate. But yeah, that's all for the second year quarterbacks. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, let's talk about the first year quarterback of note, Cam Ward. And I want to talk about him because I don't think anybody is. I literally, like, I went looking the other day just to see, like, is there anybody talking about Cam Ward? And all you could really find was people talking about, you know, he had that post-game quote where he was like, if I keep it a buck, we ass right now. Uh-huh. And that was people, and I saw a lot of people like, I'm good on him for telling the truth, even though apparently that really pissed off the Titans locker room. He had to have a meeting with Jeff Simmons and a couple of the veteran players after saying it. And again, this is my main point with Cam Ward and about everything I'm going to talk about, but like, and I get it that Cam Ward was not one of the most heralded first overall picks in recent memory. I get that there's so much baggage that comes with Caleb Williams and all of the hype train that he had, but like, there were honest to God fucking freakouts in the national media after the Texans game last year. Yeah. And even now with Caleb Williams, like I said, having performed as a top 11 quarterback through a quarter of this season, there's still this onus on him to prove that he's not a disaster. And here's Cam Ward, and he is like, even with the comeback that they had yesterday against the Fighting Tech Arizona Cardinals, like, he had a really nice throw on that last drive, I'll give him that, but like, he was still pretty fucking bad yesterday. I pulled up the numbers through the first five starts for quarterbacks, the first overall pick quarterbacks. So specifically comparing him to his peers, because the number one thing, of course, that comes out with Cam Ward anytime you bring up is the Titans are ass. Everything around him is bad. You can't judge him. And I think it's fair, though, to compare a guy like that then solely to other number one overall quarterbacks, because those guys also all went to teams that were ass.
You necessarily went to the worst team in the NFL, yeah, almost invariably, except for the Bears.
I pulled the first five starts for every first overall pick quarterback since going back to Stafford. Cam Ward right now has completed 51.8% of his passes.
Jesus Christ.
Is literally the lowest of the sample. Stafford was second lowest at 54.1%, and again, that was 16 years ago in a completely different NFL. Cam Ward is tied for the lowest amount of total passing yards at 879. The other person tied that was Goff during that disastrous first year with the Rams.
Sure.
He has the lowest yards per passing attempt of anyone other than Bryce Young. Bryce Young was 5.3 yards per attempt. Cam is 5.4.
And Bryce Caleb at this point was getting crucified.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Caleb last year, 6.4, a whole yard ahead of him, yards per attempt. Caleb six and was already being criticized. Yep. Cam has thrown only two touchdown passes. That is the lowest of any of these guys. He has a 64.1 passer rating. That is the second lowest after Stafford, again, 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he's taken 19 sacks, which is the third most of the group behind Joe Burrow, who took 22, and Kyler Murray, who took 21. And Burrow, kind of misleading, though, because Burrow had 207 pass attempts in his first five games. Kyler had 201. Cam Ward has only attempted 164 passes and still has taken 19 sacks. So the sack percentage, much higher than anybody else on this list either. So, I mean, he has been, without question, overall, the worst first overall pick through five games in 16 years. And I'm not saying all this to say Cam Ward is a bust. Cam Ward sucks. Cam Ward is doomed forever. I'm saying this to say, like, why isn't anyone talking about this kid enough to be concerned? Like, no one's even raising the question. I don't see anybody, like, it's just a given that, like, Cam Ward's on the Titans. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. We'll check in with him next year. Like, there's no pressure on him whatsoever. Nobody. And I would understand it too if it was like people expected him to be bad. Like, you don't talk about Cam Ward. Because, you were like, oh, boy, I can't, this Cam Ward guy, this is the first overall pick, sure, whatever, I don't care, this is going to be a disaster.
Right.
And that would be fine, but, like, you saw so many, there was this hard sell around draft time to talk him up as, like, I saw multiple people like, he's not just the best quarterback of a bad class. He's a deserving number one overall pick in any draft. And I was like, all right, man, I don't buy that.
That's not true.
And if, but I'm just saying, if that's where you guys were, that's what you were saying, then that is putting him on a pedestal with Cam or with Caleb and Bryce and some of these other guys. Like, if you're saying, if that's the argument you're making, you want to put him on that tier, they need to talk about him like he's on that tier. And there's just nothing. It's crickets about him being considerably worse than all of these guys.
Yeah, it does feel like, it makes me feel like behind those scenes, everybody kind of did agree with what I was saying about Cam, what you were saying about Cam, which was like,
but it was almost like we just couldn't have it.
Okay,
it feels like maybe they're worried about TV ratings for the draft if there's not a quarterback to hype up or something. Yeah. But yeah, it was. And I guess the other thing I was gonna say is, in terms of Anya, in terms of adjusted net yards per attempt, Cam Ward through five games is at 3.54 adjusted net yards per attempt. Now, obviously, he's got the rest of the season to fix this. But that currently is, there have been, I pulled every rookie season since 1998. Every quarterback that's thrown at least 100 passes as a rookie. I only found, let's see here, 40 seasons of rookies who were under four adjusted net yards per attempt. So it's bad company anyways. And Cam Ward at 3.54, currently sandwiched between Miami Hurricanes legend Ken Dorsey, and Josh Rosen. Everybody remember Josh Rosen? Everybody remember what
Josh
Rosen is up
to? Good names to be around.
And it's one of these things where it's like, even if you, so I, and I went and I raised the threshold all the way up to 4.5 adjusted net yards per attempt, because I remember Justin Fields had a 4.24 as a rookie, and that scared the shit out of me, because I didn't remember seeing below. So if you go, even if you raise the threshold all the way to under 4.5 adjusted net yards per attempt, you really don't see a lot of successes, at least, especially not in the last like 20 years. Like you get Justin Fields is in there. Here's just some of the names that, again, doing considerably better to this point than Cam Ward does. He would need a fairly significant improvement to finish in this range. But there's Quincy Carter, Dwayne Haskins, Christian Ponder, Justin Fields, Mike McMahon, Mark Sanchez. Ooh, tough weekend for him. Yeah. John Skelton, Devlin Hodges, Joey Harrington, Tim Couch, Charlie Fry, Zach Wilson, Blake Bortles, Chad Hutchinson, Kyle Bowler, Chris Wanky, Derek Anderson. Like, it's concerning territory. And that's all I'm saying. We have seen guys, and now Jared Goff, all of this applied to Jared Goff when he had that disastrous rookie season, and they got a new coach, they got a new scheme, he took off. So I'm not saying that Cam Ward is doomed by any stretch of the imagination. I just am like, someone should be asking, like, at what point do we become concerned? Like, at what point can we just at least admit that the track that he's currently on is pretty fucking concerning? And I don't
feels,
think you can just,
it
I don't
feels
think you
a
can
lot
just
like
wave
the,
it off
the
with
Kenny Pickett draft. I feel like, you know, not a first overall pick, but the first QB off the board. It kind of feels like people just focusing on the positives, because I feel like people really did come in with low expectations and they just don't want to admit it. They don't want to say it out loud. Like,
yeah,
well, we didn't really think this guy would be too
right. And
good.
That's kind of what, well, and the problem is that like about once a week, Cam does make like one cool throw and Twitter does explode with people being like, oh, there's Cam Ward. And I'm just like, all right, man. And that's the thing. Yeah. If people were just honest, that's what I want. Like, if you're just honest, like, you'd actually don't think Cam Ward's good, and that's why you're not concerned about what is basically just confirmation, fine. But that wasn't the way he was being talked about at draft time or through this summer. Yeah. Hilarious that there was a very smug ESPN article where the Titans were like, we studied what happened to Bryce. We studied what happened to Caleb. We are not going to repeat these sins. And then, you know, everyone knows Brian Callahan's a fucking dead man walking. They're going to be doing all of it the same way the Bears did. But yeah, no, that's where I wanted to be on Cam. I just wanted to check in and be like, hey, does everyone know that it's going very poorly? Like, can anyone talk about it?
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting because it does feel like the default excuse is, well, the Titans are really bad. You know, you got
to
get cut.
But that's why I compared them to all the other number ones. Those guys are all go to bad teams.
Cam is a huge part of why they are, in fact, that bad. Like, right. It's not the most talentless team in the NFL, certainly.
Right.
It's not like the Bengals without
he is
Burrow, right?
Performing like, worse than Will Levis was doing on the Titans.
Yeah.
And Pete Prisco, because Pete Prisco was trying to make the point that everyone was too hard on his boy Will Levis, was like, yeah, Will Levis did better than this. And I was like, yeah, he did, Pete, but that's not making the point you wanted to make. It's not that that's right. that's not secretly a Will Levis is good.
I mean, point. If you remember, Will Levis also had multiple kind of fun pass as a game, especially early on.
Right.
And Cam is really only pulling the one off, and the rest of the time he is looking
pretty
miserable.
And it's not like the adjusted completion percentage isn't much better. It's also dead last in the NFL. It's not like he's being betrayed by 10 drops a game. Like, yeah, he's had Calvin Ridley's definitely dropped some passes, but like, whew. But yeah, I mean, again, I'm not burying the guy or anything. I never thought that much of him to begin with, but I'm also not burying him. I'm just saying that, like, I'd like to point out the double standard here as to when we worry about some guys and when we don't. Like,
yeah.
Because it just seems like the general consensus on Cam Ward is like, eh, we don't even need to pay attention to him until next year. We're not judging him for any of this. Which maybe right. should be how we treat most rookies, but that certainly wasn't how we treated rookies last year. We made verdicts on how every one of these guys was going to play for the rest of their career based off their rookie season. So,
well, and it's also about location, right? We got one guy here in Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah. We got another guy in New York, New York, Kyle. And I know you want to talk about that guy. He's getting a lot of coverage right now.
You know, and this is actually, I think this is really the first time that we on this podcast have talked about Jackson Dart a bit.
Yeah.
Because, again, we got to quit making this mistake, man. You didn't want to talk about J.J. McCarthy and Penix and Nix very much on the podcast because you were like, those fuckers aren't going in the first round.
Yeah.
And then they did.
I was like, no way is somebody
and
stupid
we were talking
to do this.
In the spring, and we were like, people are talking about Jackson Dart, but come on. Wank, wank, that ain't going to happen. And then it happened. So we got to, I think this year when we do our quarterback episode for the draft, I'm going to have to do like five of these fuckers no matter what. I'm going to have to like.
Oh, this year's going to be so interesting because nobody knows who's going.
Every person that's mentioned is a first round possibility. I'm going to have to talk about them because apparently someone will do it.
You're right.
But when I did sit down, so when he went in the first round and I finally just got done entering all of the 2020, because what I usually do is I enter a couple guys before the draft that I know I'm going to talk about on the podcast and that I want to make predictions for. And then after the draft is over and teams have drafted all these guys, I enter all of those guys in the spreadsheet so that I have as big of a database as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you don't end up playing in the NFL, if you get drafted by the NFL, obviously the NFL thinks something of you for some reason or another. And I think that makes you a useful comparison to other prospects going forward. So I enter everybody in there and it takes forever. Finally just got done entering everybody in the spreadsheet. And I was looking at Jackson Dart. And when I watched him, when I watched Jackson Dart, you and I said the same thing. It's like, does he look any different to you than Matt Corral looked in that offense? Like, this is just, it's Kiffin ball. There's four plays. They dress him up different ways and run him over and over. But, like, you can't. And it looks like when his first read's not there, he pretty much just takes off and runs. And I was like, that was Matt Corral. And he got laughed out of the league immediately. So I was just like, why are we doing this with him? And then I looked and I was like, he does remind me of someone else a little bit, though. Two people, mm-hmm. actually, yeah. when I looked at Jackson Dart. I thought of Mitch Trubisky, and I thought of Zach Wilson. Like, I looked at it, and then so it was really funny when I did the comps in the spreadsheet, when I split all the data, the closest overall comparison to Jackson Dart in all the categories was Zach Wilson. That was his closest comp. And when I looked at clean pocket data specifically, which sometimes is even more telling if you filter out the pressure stuff and just look at a guy in clean pocket situations when he's at his best, the closest one was still Zach Wilson.
Nice.
Really funny. And like, yeah, so and through his first two games, you know, both games, the Giants start off with touchdowns and people were really freaking out. But like, I noticed that like after those early touchdown drives, he has done nothing through two games. And when you watch the film, and JT O'Sullivan pointed this out a lot, there's a lot of plays where it's like, well, I guess he got 6 yards there on the scramble, but there was a dude streaking downfield that he didn't even look at. Like, he didn't even attempt to make a read.
Yeah.
And so far, he's really getting himself into trouble in terms of pocket presence. Like, one of my favorite things that Pro Football Focus tracks, they do QB allowed sacks and QB allowed pressure percentage, where it's like, how many sacks did they blame on the quarterback where he had an option and he held onto the ball or he ran himself into trouble? What percentage of your pressured dropbacks are actually the quarterback's fault? Last year, the league leader in QB allowed pressure responsibility was Tyler Huntley among qualified QBs. So 24.5% of the time of his pressured dropbacks, PFF determined that Tyler Huntley was responsible for the pressure to some degree. So about one out of every four pressures he faced was actually his fault because he was holding it too long. He was drifting into pressure, whatever. Jackson Dart right now is lapping the field in the NFL. 54.2% of his pressures so far are his fault. Five of the seven sacks that he's taken are his fault. This is a dude, he has no pocket presence. If his first read's not immediately there, he just panics. He freaks the fuck out. It's Mitch Trubisky to a hilarious degree, because Mitch was always, you know, Mitch Trubisky always had that first scripted drive every game with Nagy where he looked pretty good and then just fell off. And so I actually went and I looked up the stats for the first two drives of his two games versus the rest of the games in both games. So his basically what you can assume are his scripted plays versus his not scripted plays and how big the drop off is. So through his first two starts, on the first two drives of the game, he is 12 of 14 passing, so 85% completion, or almost 86% completions. He's averaging 8.6 yards per attempt. Two of his three touchdown passes have come on those early drives. He's only taken one sack. Also on those first two drives, he's got six carries, rushing carries, for 55 yards. He's averaging almost 9.2 yards per attempt carrying the ball. He has his only rushing touchdown on the opening drives of the two games. The rest of the two games, after those first two drives are in the book, his completion percentage drops to 27 of 46, so only 58.7%. He's only thrown for 192 yards after those first two drives. That's just 4.2 yards per pass attempt.
Nice.
He's thrown one touchdown pass, and it was a fucking shovel pass at the goal line after Justin Herbert had, like, turned it over inside his own 10. Like, it was not... Yeah. Is the cheapest touchdown pass imaginable.
Not very, really a touchdown pass.
Yeah. Also very Mitch Trubisky, because God knows he had quite a few touchdown passes on shovels there for a bit, too.
Yeah.
Both of his interceptions against the Saints were terrible and came later in the game when he wasn't scripted. And he's taken five sacks once the scripted stuff is on. And his passer rating, which is 142.3 on the scripted drives, drops to 57.5 on the non-scripted drives. Even the running the ball... On the non-scripted drives, he's run it 13 times for 54 yards, which is just 4.2 yards per carry. So less than half of the, like, designed runs and the scrambles that he's had. Like, he had that, his first touchdown was a 15-yard QB draw, like, called play that they sprung on the Chargers. Like, I don't know that I can remember, we'll have to see how long this keeps up throughout the rest of the season, but I can't remember anyone with as drastic of a drop-off from the scripted plays where all he's got to do is just run his RPO bullshit and throw it to the guy that Dable has assured him is going to be open, and then when he actually has to think for himself and how quickly he just panics and pisses himself, it's really funny. It's high comedy. It's some of my favorite film to watch so far.
We keep saying this, you know, every year we've gone over the draft about Ole Miss, and it's just you go in and they always have a prospect or two. We said it about Coral. We said it about Jackson Dart, and it's just you try to watch the tape and it a couple plays you get in. And it's just they're not playing football. There's nothing there to see. There's nothing there to grade. It's a whole different thing that Lane Kiffin is doing. They're not teaching the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, the running backs, like anything about how football or modern offenses work. It's like on a track. I don't even know how to explain it. It's like a toy model train. And sometimes there's junctions at different places. And I think when they get to the NFL, cause the same thing happened to Coral. He went out there, he threw the ball a couple times and the coaches were just like, where do I have to start? It feels like I have to start in like seventh grade ball, like junior high ball or something, you know, like you don't understand the terminology. You don't understand like concepts that should be basic, even to a guy like Kyler Murray, you know, like a guy who barely took snaps in college. It's just not there. Lane Kiffin isn't teaching that. Lane Kiffin is the anti Lincoln Riley. As far as college coaches go, you're getting a tabula rasa quarterback, you know, out of Ole Miss. It's like, well, maybe he has talent, but like, you're going to have to teach him a lot to figure it out.
Well, and I think we did mention this maybe briefly during the preseason whenever I was ranting about Jackson Dart, but I was like, it feels like the only chance for this to succeed is the exact opposite of what's going to happen. Because like, it was like, maybe if he can sit the bench and they get a whole year to teach him like the basics of NFL quarterbacking and he's not thrown in the fire. But like we knew we've seen this movie, but we've been this movie. Like Shane is Ryan Pace and Dable is Matt Nagy. And it was like, they're going to start the kid the minute they're 0-3, he is going to look like a rookie who had 4 play calls in college. And it's really, I maybe people think I'm, it's really not. There are like 4 passing concepts that Ole Miss runs. They manage to run them out of like 15 different formations. They dress it up, they hide it, but like it's literally, it's 4 passing comp. And he's not prepared. And you rarely see a guy with this level of lack of pocket presence improve. Like he's panicky. Like he drops his eyes so fast. It's just like, yeah.
He gives up on the play instantly because he doesn't know what the play is. He doesn't even know what he's giving up on. It feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, who was it you were calling? And you called somebody Hendon Hooker. You were like, he's not even a one read quarter. He's a no read quarterback.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's what Jackson Dart feels like right now. Like the scripted, he runs the scripted stuff. Okay. And then the minute that like it's true drop back, like you have to make a read. He just doesn't even try right now. It's really,
he doesn't understand the game of football at a fundamental level. And that has become abundantly clear here watching him play, you know, week after week. And it sucks that he's being put out there and having to be put through this. But yeah, that's just, I hope nobody ever drafts an Ole Miss quarterback again, as long as Lane Kiffin is head coach there. I hope we don't make this mistake.
It's going to be tough for us though, man, because I think there's going to be more Tennessees and Ole Misses going forward than there are Lincoln Riley's. Like, and the thing is, Lincoln Riley's offense isn't even that pro style. Like, I think he, as a quarterback coach, does a good job with like footwork and right, teaching guys some stuff, but like even the concepts that he runs are not like super NFL caliber, but he looks like fucking Bill Walsh compared to Lane Kiffin. Like it's like the stuff that Lane Kiffin's doing is more NFL street than anything. And you can't even, it's so hard to translate. And I think that's going to keep happening. We're going to see more of these guys.
Just that touchdown pass that Caleb had to Rome last week, the crosser over the middle of the field where he throws it over a linebacker, nails Roman stride, right? Get what looks like an easy touchdown because Caleb made it look easy. If Jackson Dart saw that play, if he was looking at that unfold in front of him, he would think everyone was covered, the play was broken, he would
he's
have panicked
trying to break
and given
the pocket,
up a second
he's taking, yeah, he's taking
he's
an
running
back.
Like, and I, the path to that point, the path for Jackson Dart, just to that throw from Caleb, a quarterback who we both agree is still developing and still coming into his own with Ben Johnson, is it's years away. Yeah. And it's not his fault. He went to Ole Miss to play football. Yeah. He didn't know this was going to happen to him, but it's what happened, man. So get your money while you can, kid, because unfortunately Dable is about to be fired and you are stuck in quarterback purgatory, yeah, buddy.
And I mean, like, that's going to be another thing, too, is that, like, just kind of like with Mitch, like, it's really hard to picture a new regime.
There's no way.
Looking at a Jackson Dart and be like, yeah, I can save this. That's the right guy I want to tie my wagon to. Like, it's, yeah.
They're going to come in, look at him objectively, and say, oh, yeah, we cut that guy. Like, right.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
are you talking
and,
about?
Like, and yeah, and obviously this only happened because Dable and Shane were desperate, and they really convinced themselves that a spade, you know, anyways, so
this
yeah, that's
why, we've seen it before with the Bears, obviously, but you don't give a head coach and a GM who, like, everybody knows is probably going to get fired halfway through next season. You just get rid of them now because they're going to try to save themselves.
Never give somebody the you must make the play or you must win games and you must find your quarterback as a future mandate in the same year. Just don't do it.
It doesn't make sense.
That doesn't work. All right, so we're running out of time here. Boy, that Cardinals collapse was hilarious, right? Like, that's going to be one of the funniest fucking... There were, like... I think Robert Mays did it best when he was like, there were, like, 4 different plays in that Cardinals-Titans loss, or Cardinals collapse, that would have been the dumbest play of the month, and they were all in the same game to the point... Like, our dear friend Tech, who's a Cardinals fan, he's in the Discord, he was like, hey, did you guys even know that the snapper snapped the ball too quickly and doinked the ball off of Kyler Murray's helmet, and that cost them a chance for a field goal? And I was like, no, I didn't know that. And then I had already forgotten about the guy who fumbled the ball before he crossed the end zone because I was too busy reflecting on the fact that they somehow gave up a touchdown after picking off Cam Ward. Like, truly wild. Don't think I've ever seen the interception for a touchdown play before. Brilliant
stuff. I think Kyler Murray said it best, where he was like, that's how you lose a football game 101. And it really was. Like, that was the most incredible giveaway of all time. Yeah. And our friend Tech had a great take. Our poor Cardinals friend friend. And that's why it hurts when the Cardinals do this shit.
Yeah.
But he mentioned that like there's not even anything good to take away from this game on either side, right? Because it's not right. like Cam Ward wrestled the game away.
Right. Like if you're the Titans
really yeah. stole one, yeah. right? It's he sucked. Like he threw an interception that turned into a touchdown. He had yeah. one good pass and boy, it was good.
Yeah.
That was pretty. Nice. That had the chat going wild.
Nice.
But the rest of the game, he was terrible. And they just tripped and fell over their dicks into a win. And of course, you know, Tech can remember the famous crown their ass game, the Bears and the Cardinals. And even in that game, at least it was like, God, that these was Bears a, special teams are
right. That was a Bears defense with maybe three Hall of Famers on it. Yep. Like, and Devin Hester being the goat kick returner of all like that. The Bears still took that game from them. It was not the embarrassment yep. that
and we rode a, that to the Super Bowl.
This
you know?
Was gift wrapping. Literally just gift wrapping a win to the worst team in football that shouldn't have even been competitive against you. That wasn't no, competitive against
they
you.
They weren't competitive.
Yeah.
I don't know really, how they won the game.
Yeah. Okay, so just ripping off a few takes real quick that we don't have to discuss in depth. A, boy, it's incredible that being the Chargers is somehow just, like, more powerful than Jim Harbaugh-ing because the Chargers are so fucking snake bit, man. You lose Slater. You lose Alt. They've now lost to Marion Hampton. Herbert has been pressured on something like 54% of his dropbacks the last 3 weeks. Truly wild shit. Like, this was a team. They waxed the Chiefs week one. They looked like legit Super Bowl contenders. And now you're yeah. already, in typical Chargers fashion, you're like, I don't know if there's enough there to squeeze in a wild card, man. They're,
yeah.
They're, it's, how they're does this happen apart. To them every year?
I
every
Herbert
year,
got,
how does this happen?
I think Herbie got real used to having like 10 seconds in the pocket.
He had an offensive weeks. Line oh, for the first time so in his happy. Career last year, and yeah. then now he's yeah, because like early in his career, he was very used to just having to mitigate pressure, and like this yep. year, you know, definitely he was like, no, it's kind of like that Twilight Zone episode where the guy like his glasses.
We had time now.
Like, I had time now. I had now time. It's not fair. So yeah, that's the Chargers.
While we've been recording this, the Cubs started up 3-0 on a home run, and that was
I've
great.
Been following that.
That's they are now down 7-3.
Seven so, to three. Ooh, yeah. Okay, it was 4-3 last I looked. Well, that's not good.
So, well, you know, I'm glad they didn't go out and get a starter at the deadline, Kyle. They probably didn't need one.
The Buccaneers are fun, right?
We love the Bucs.
Has there been a bad Buccaneers game in the last like 3 years? That's one of the best watches in football every week, man.
It feels like the Bucs kind of conspire to set Baker up to win the game on the final drive. They've done that like over and over again. They kind of like let the other team come back, and then they're like, Baker, you got it. You got it, Baker. We're tied. Yeah. We got 2 minutes left. We're going to win this game. I don't care. Yeah.
The Dolphins, like that's got to be nails in the coffin, right? Like to blow that game against Bryce Young, he looked, to let him come back and defeat you.
That brings
like,
that's
up gotta a be that, right?
That like, brings up a really good point about the NFL this year as a whole, which is kind of a good way to put a pin in this podcast, I guess. Which is that it doesn't really feel like there's any elite teams, and because of that, it feels like the worst teams in the NFL suddenly have a shot. Against the middle tier, like the Panthers are really bad, really bad team. But when you're playing like, you know, I don't know, the Dolphins and the Falcons, all of a sudden you got a fucking chance, right? Because like there are a lot of bad teams. Kind of gives me hope for the Bears playoff chances.
If the Bears can figure out something on defense.
Yeah.
That's going to be the concern. Yeah. I guess the last thought that I had before we go quiet into this good night. I think it's over for Geno Smith. I think it's donezos. Mm-hmm. Parrot is no more. He has ceased to be.
We've known this for a while, but the shelf life of Alex Smith Event Horizon guys, it kind of lasts like 5 years. Tannehill, Geno Smith, Alex Smith, like all these guys, it feels like you get about 5 years and then you're kind of, now obviously you've been in the league for 7 years when it starts. You know, you're getting to your 12th, 13th year. You're going to be pretty old.
Geno
the gas is running out.
yeah, Geno's 35 at this point. Like, it's not like he, you know, Darnold, hopefully, you know, he because he entered the league so young, Darnold is only 28. So hopefully he's still, you know, he could get a decade out of this maybe. But yeah, no, it just, and it's funny because people then do, like, because he's bad this year, it means that all the years when people said he was actually good, when people didn't think he was good in Seattle, means he wasn't that good. And yeah, like, I think he was legit good. Although I do think people went over the top there. I love my film bros. There were some people that were really make, like, Geno is actually secretly elite takes. And I never got quite there. I was like, Geno is very much the 13th best quarterback in the NFL.
Right in a nice sweet spot. Upper half of the league, not top 10.
But, oh boy, is he cooked. He is cooked.
He's got Pete Carroll depressed. That's not cool.
Yeah. Like I said last week when we were... Like I said last week when we were doing the postgame, I do think some of it is, again, that Chip Kelly. You want to talk about Lane Kiffin. Here's Chip Kelly running like four plays in the NFL. And guess what? People are on to him just like they were 10 years ago, Chip. This is why you went back to college.
Nothing about that Raiders experiment is working right now, which is too bad. A lot of likable dudes down there in Las Vegas. Nobody lives in Las Vegas. Nobody visits Las Vegas.
I think we all wanted them to be like an entertaining... like an entertaining team, and they're just not. So that's a bummer.
Sure. I mean, another thing to talk about this first quarter of the season, Kyle. Boy, it felt like the first couple weeks, at least, were like the last game of the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of just become the new normal. Weeks one and two lately are...
They don't really mean anything. It just seems like complete nonsense. Everyone, even veteran teams, like the Chiefs, just seem discombobulated the first couple weeks of the season. Well, like, they haven't woken up.
It's funny because, you know, I feel like right now, for understandable reasons, like everyone's high on Drake May, not down on Caleb, but he's not riding as high as he was off the Cowboys game because he was kind of sluggish in the box score against the Raiders. And everybody, and people watch the Raiders get waxed by the Commanders. They watch them get waxed by the Colts. And so that win by the Bears doesn't look super impressive. But like the Patriots lost to the Raiders week one, guys. Drake May had, I think, two interceptions in that game.
Yeah,
against the Raiders. So, like, weird stuff happens in the early NFL going. Weird stuff happens any given Sunday. It's all about matchups. So,
Cowboys are making us look good, though. Thanks, Cowboys. That was really nice of you, right? You only scored 14 points on us.
Oh, my God.
40 on Green Bay?
Talking about when it's over. Like, Justin Fields, man, if you can't...
Yeah.
I know he's turned into a garbage time king. It's really funny that Justin, after all these years of being terrible in the fourth quarter, has figured out the way to be good in the fourth quarter is to just be down by three scores. Just become a garbage time king and then fix your career fourth quarter numbers. But like, man, he couldn't. Matt Eberflus's defense works against one kind of quarterback, and it's Justin Field at this point, where that guy who doesn't know where he wants to go with the ball struggles against zone. It's you know, it's funny because like box score wise, if you just look at like yards per game, yards per attempt, like Justin's arguably having the best season of his career, but like he had, I think, 35 net yards at halftime against the Dolphins. He had like 60 net yards at halftime against the Cowboys. It's all fourth quarter garbage time lately. And it's just, man, he is just, it's depressing.
Yeah, you look at Justin and it feels like, man, this should be so fixable because it's all about the speed at which he gets the ball out, right? And the speed at which he processes. But that is a massive hurdle for him. It's funny because that stupid article that came out about Caleb, it was all talking about like, oh, he's such a slow processor. He's just sitting there thinking about everything, not doing anything. He's like, he's stuck in molasses. And that actually applies to Justin. And then Caleb's out here and he's going so lightning fast now this season. And I'm so glad that he's making that article just seem like the stupidest thing on earth.
Yeah.
Like Matt Eberflus was looking at Justin and then looking at Caleb and saying, well, Caleb's the slow one.
Yeah, these two things are the same.
So yeah, I think that's all we've got. God, I am wound tight for this game this weekend, Kyle. I hope the Bears can go out there and win.
I hope they can
so
pull
many
it off.
so many narratives I feel would be put to rest with a nice win over the Commies.
Yeah,
nice
I just feel the run defense is going to let us down. So you be
optimistic. This is the best run game in the league. There's no question. Washington has the best run attack in the league. So there's not really any shame in getting beat up on the ground here. I just want to see good game from Caleb. Let's keep it competitive. You know, well, how about we stop Jaden from passing? Let's see more from Tyreek Stevenson because he has some demons to fight back here in Washington.
I mean, they should hopefully have Kyler Gordon back for that game. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll have Grady Jarrett back. We'll have to see. But yeah, I mean, I won't lie to you folks and say that I'm feeling super confident. I think the Bears will score points. I do think that, but like the run defense against Vegas was really bad. It was bad against Dallas and yeah. So anyway, all right.
We'll talk next week. We'll see how that all turned out.
Later, Gators. Way out on that bumper floor. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving here.